Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser said it all.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. We have another great episode for you today. My guest is Tony Garea. We talk about Rick Martel, the Vinces, being an agent, and much, much more. So let's just get right to it like we always do, right? Let's take a break, and when we come back, we will have my interview with Tony Garea.
Hey, you bums. We have to take a quick break.
Filsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit FilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilsingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams. Hey ho, everybody. Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by the one and only Tony Garea. Tony, how are you?
Very good, thanks.
Yeah, well, thank you for giving me time. Tell me, you grew up in New Zealand and were an accomplished rugby player when you were young, weren't you?
Yeah, well, I done pretty good at rugby. It was something that you did over there, you know.
Yeah.
That was the number one sport. And New Zealand is very proud of the All Blacks, but maybe not so much this week because they got beat real bad by South Africa.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you also, before you got into wrestling, while you were still in New Zealand, you had some interesting jobs that I saw that were kind of peculiar. Did I see that at one time you were a rope maker? Is that correct?
Yeah. I worked in a rope factory that's no longer there. They tore it down, that part of town. And I was there for about 18 months, and then I went to the forest out in the country, worked out there. And then I got a job using explosives on a dam they were building for a water reservoir for Auckland. They had 2 million cubic yards in the dam. I was about 17, 18, I think, at the time. I was driving bulldozers and motor scrapers and anything you could drive, I drove.
That's unheard. I mean, that's hard to believe nowadays that you let a 17, 18-year-old drive that stuff.
Oh, well, I think of a 17-year-old and put him on a D9 Caterpillar, and it's like, holy shit, did I do that?
Yeah, really?
Well, and I worked with dynamite, too. They had big rocks on the water side of the dam, and they wanted them, smaller. So
yeah.
I used to use clay and find a little niche and put the clay in and cut about 2.5 inches of jellignite and put a detonator in it and a fuse. And start lighting them and then run like hell. When I heard the first bang, I turned around and, to watch, the small rocks, they'd go up in the air. And once or twice, I just had to sidestep one coming down. But if I wasn't looking, it would have hit me.
Yeah. Mm. Well, and some of your rugby teammates were wrestling, pro wrestlers.
There was Wild Don Scott and Dave Henderson. Actually, Don Scott spotted me. This was in the mid to late 60s. And I'd start working out with weights to gain weight.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a no-no back then.
Mm.
And it was strange, because they said, well, get muscle bound and you won't be able to run.
Mm.
And move around. And then the coach said, Tony, shake those guys off. I had 3 or 4 guys on me and they still couldn't pull me down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of amused by that. And then I ended up on the wing, which is like a running back in football.
Yeah.
American football, And there was only, I think, one guy on the team could beat me over 100 yards. And I was 50 pound heavier than him. And he beat me over 100 yards by a couple of yards.
Oh, yeah. Well, tell me, when you started, what was the pro wrestling scene like in New Zealand at that time?
Well, it was seasonal. And if I remember rightly, I think it started in February and went through to about August.
Okay.
It wasn't a full-time job. It was just a part-time job where I could pick up a little extra. Like back then, I was working 40 hours a week for maybe $40 if I was lucky.
Yeah.
So, when I wrestled, I'm trying to think if I was in an opening match, I might have got $10 or $12. And if you were in the main event and it was a good house, you got as much as 50.
Yeah.
I remember one week there. Between my job and I was a bouncer at a nightclub also and wrestling, I made $120. That was the biggest week I ever had.
That was good money then, though.
Oh. Yeah, well, you bought a brand new car for $2,400.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, but I wasn't into brand new cars. I'm still not.
Yeah.
They've got to be old and they got to have some mileage on them. They got to be tested.
That's right. So they got to have some character, don't they?
Yeah.
So, in those early days, like you said, right, you were still working, still playing rugby, but then you end up going to Australia for Jim Barnett, and that kind of shifted your priorities a little bit, right?
Yeah. I virtually quit wrestling. And about 11 months later, the promoter called me, Ernie Pinchers was his name, mm-hmm. and he said, how would you like to go to Florida, to Australia for 10 days? For $250, I thought, oh, my God. Yeah, I got to go.
Yeah.
So I went over there, and Jim Barnett was the promoter, and I was as green as hell.
Yeah.
I remember the first match I had there, the guy said, oh, I'm kind of nervous. You guys come over from New Zealand, you're a little stiff. You know, he was worried about me hurting him.
Yeah.
And I was only going to go over there. They were supposed to, just chop meat with me for this one guy coming in, Bulldog Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably thought I was too green, or maybe he seen something in me. Anyway, he kept me 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And then he said, I'd like you to come back, because his tour was going to Singapore and Hong Kong. But I wasn't on any of those. And it was supposed to be 6 weeks, and it ended up being about 3 months.
Yeah.
So I went back, and I was there for 12 weeks, and some of the local guys there, they said, if Jim Barnett asks you if you want to go to the States, he'll only ask you one time. So if you say no, that's a no, and he'll never ask you again.
Yeah.
So he asked me, he said, Tony, would you like to go to the States and wrestle? I said, yes.
Yeah.
You know, I just that quick.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a pot to pee in. You know, I had nothing. I had a family back home, had a house payment.
Yep.
And so they put in for a visa. Eddie Graham did. I got in touch with Eddie, and he got my information. And I went over with a local boy from Australia named Johnny Gray. And we both came over in early 72.
Yeah.
And Larry O'Day and Butch Miller were here,
the
Australians. And and they kind of took care of us, showed us where to go. We stayed in the hotels and everything. And I had $200 in my pocket. I think back, I think, what the hell was I doing? And then I had to buy a round-trip airline ticket, and I didn't have enough. But I had a car worth about $1,400.
Yeah.
So I got a loan on that for $500, and I was turned down at first, and then I talked a guy into it. If I never got that loan, I wouldn't be here talking to you.
Yeah. That's
wild. So I got the round-trip ticket, because you needed to show that, you know, when you got here. I didn't have anything.
Yeah. Well, like you said, you worked for Graham in Florida, but you worked for San Francisco, L.A., Georgia, all these others. Did you have a territory that you most liked working with prior to going to New York?
No, well, it was Florida, and then it was New York. And New York, there was a wrestler named Tony Marino, and I met him in Ireland. He came over. And he was in Florida. A lot of guys came down to Florida, and they worked a couple of shots in Florida, you know, picked up a couple of bucks, maybe 100, 200.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, how are you doing? And I said, not that well. As a matter of fact, for 7 months, I averaged $295 a month, and I sent $100 back to New Zealand, you know, to my family.
Yeah.
I said to Eddie Graham one time, I was at the office, the Sportatorium.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Eddie, I'd like to go up to New York. He said, whereabouts, Tony? He said, Buffalo. He said, oh, you don't want to go up there. The promoter couldn't be trusted, evidently. He said, let me give Vince McMahon a call. And it was about 3 weeks. And I talked to Eddie he talked to me. He said, oh, I tried to call Vince, but I haven't got him yet. And then about 3 weeks later, I went into the office and Eddie was there and he said, oh, let me call Vince. He hasn't got back to me. So we called him and he booked me right there, you know, in the office.
Yeah.
Like he was on the phone to Vince and they talked about changing my name. They said, no, we'll leave his own name. And then I got a starting date, September 20th, 1972, to the first TV. Vince brought you in, like, first of all, 6 weeks before to do two TVs, and they done three TVs at a time, one on Tuesday and one on Wednesday, one on Wednesday in Hamburg at that time. And the Tuesday mm-hmm. was Philadelphia at the Philadelphia mm-hmm. Arena.
Yeah, right.
And I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
And then he gave me a starting date. I think it was October 28th, if that was a Saturday, in Paterson, New Jersey. And, I walked out there, first match with Joe Turco, and, oh, there was a hell of an ovation, you know.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
people had seen me on TV. And I yeah. said, what the hell is going on? I had no idea.
Yeah. So why were they talking about changing your name? Tell me about that. Why did that send around?
Well, I think it was, because of the ethnic groups up in New England. Area could either be Italian, it could be Portuguese, it could be Spanish, it could be anything. But then I talk with this New Zealand accent, so I was completely different.
Yeah.
I that's all it was,
He might gotcha, have, okay.
He might have wanted to change my name to Hernandez or something like that.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah. So what was Vince Sr. like to work for?
Oh, he was fantastic. His word was his bond, And when he walked into a room like 6'3" in a three-piece suit, and, there was something there. Not that he commanded it, but it was there,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was great, He told me one time, he said, Tony, as long as I asked him about my career, and he said, as long as I'm alive, you've got nothing to worry about.
You worked for the company for a long time. What compared to me, right? You worked for Senior, and then you worked for what they call Junior, even though he's not truly Junior.
Yeah.
What's the differences between the two?
Well, Junior was a go-get-him, but Vince, he kind of had his territory, and he was friends with all the other promoters, But But Junior seen the possibility of what happened, And I heard that first big the third big WrestleMania.
Yeah.
It was, everything was in the pot. And if it went, it went. If it didn't, then that was it.
Yeah.
Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But I was fortunate, I became an agent, and some of the boys, they go, he's a stooge, blah, blah, blah. I was easy on the guys because I was with them every day,
Sure, yeah.
And, I couldn't be, I see you walking through the airport, your shoelace was undone. That's going to be $100 fine. I'm exaggerating there. But that's what we were. But, if it wasn't, I talked to some of them and say, hey, I heard what you did last night. You better ease up on that, because, Vince knew everything that went on. Even the old man did. I was in California, in San Diego. I hit the top rope with my right hand and I broke my little finger. It went all the way over my ring finger.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I pulled it out. I straightened it up. It never bothered me. And then I half-assed slipped in the shower and hit my toe. And on the Tuesday when we got back, he asked me, he said, how's your finger, Tony? I said, good. And then he said, what about your toe? I said, that's good, too. He knew. Every little thing, you know, like telephone, tele-wrestler.
That's right. That's right. Did Junior have a little bit of, you think, have a little bit of loyalty to you for what you, for working, you working for his dad and what you did for his dad? Was there a little bit of that sense?
He might have had, but the reason I got the agent job, I believe, was they were looking for another agent, and Strongbow spoke up for me.
Oh, okay.
I had quite a rapport with Strongbow. A lot of guys didn't like him.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess because of the way, you know, he talked after the match, but he had a lot of psychology.
Sure, right.
Like one of the guys lost the match, and he walked back to the dressing room, and they didn't play his music, and he was mad as hell. And then he went to Strongbow, you know. He said, where's my goddamn music, you know?
Yeah.
He said, you just lost the match. You're angry about the music, but the people don't know that. They think you're angry about losing the match. You're going to come back next time, and you're going to draw money.
Sure,
But I didn't see any reason for playing music, you know, when a top babyface lost his match.
Right, sure.
But that was just me. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was just gonna get back to when you're in ring. Like when you got started, you pretty quickly had some success and in 73, you won the tag titles with Haystacks Calhoun.
Yeah.
And that's one of those names. Calhoun's one of those guys that was always an attraction because of his size. What was it like to work with Haystacks?
It was all right. Like I was working with Fuji and Tanaka.
Yep, sure.
Uh-huh. You know, so the people wanted to see me tag Calhoun because he would take care of business.
Yep.
But Fuji and Tanaka didn't want him in the ring for too long. Just start the match. Take over, give it to me, make me shine, and then cut me off. Like in Madison Square Garden, we had a 31-minute match, and I was in the ring 27 minutes.
Yeah,
but I
didn't
mind. That basically got me over, I think.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and you also had, you had tag title reigns with Dean Ho, Larry Zbyszko, twice with Rick Martel.
Yeah.
Why did they use you in tag teams so much in that time?
I guess they felt it, it worked well and it drew money. You know, we had the Valiants.
Yeah.
Dean and I, I used to adapt to my opponent's style. You're like George the Animal Steel. I doubt if anybody worked with him more than me. Mm-hmm. But, I didn't try to fight it. This was his gimmick, and it was there for me to put it over when he came in. And then when he left, he put me over. But he also made me shine to a degree while I was putting him over.
Yeah.
That was all-time psychology. Now it's basically, I call it a stunt fest.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
But why would you go over the top rope and land on a bunch of guys and not beat anybody?
Don't ask me about the current product. I don't even know. I don't know what they're thinking. but of all your tag title runs, right? You and Rick Martel is probably the most known, and you held the tag titles twice. What was it? Why do you think you and Martel clicked so well and are most remembered?
I think it's because we had similar styles. You know, we didn't even have to talk to each other. You know, we kind of just, in the match, we just knew. We might have said something in the dressing room.
Yeah.
You know, about, well, let's do this spot, you know. And and that was about it. Yeah. He was great. I loved working with Rick.
Yeah, I've always been.
Away from Larry or Dean, but
sure, of course. I've always been a huge Rick Martel fan. I always thought he was one of the best in-ring workers. Yeah. But you don't hear him talked about a whole lot, right? How underappreciated is Rick Martel for his in-ring work? I mean, he's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, he started when he was very young, and then I think when he came to New York with me, he had as many years in the ring as I did.
Yeah, yeah.
He was down in New Zealand with Morocco and Mark Lewin and Curtis Iaukea, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And Curtis have great ring psychology, you know.
Yeah,
so
right, yeah.
He was learn a lot. You know, he learned a lot down there in my home country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, in your years, you know, you did a lot of tag team wrestling all those years. Was there ever any thought, any discussion to turn a new heel at any point while you were in the WWF?
No, I didn't hear of anything. And then there was a couple of times I thought I might. I worked with Bob Backlund one time. And Lanny Poffo. And Lanny was mm-hmm. in. And, you know, with Bob, I thought I'll just have a good wrestling match, you know, sure. with him, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the way it went. I really couldn't do anything with Lanny because I was protecting his injury, you know.
Right, right. Did you ever work heel anywhere that you worked?
No.
No, that's weird. Did you ever think, what if I'd like to give that a try and see what that's like?
No, I thought about it, and I didn't know how I would go about, you know, being a heel, really.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. There's a different ring psychology.
Sure, but, absolutely.
Know,
yeah.
It's very easy. Yeah.
Yeah. And like we said, right, you worked a lot of tag teams, but all these different partners, but you worked with so many teams, right? You mentioned the Valiant Brothers, and then, I mean, you worked the Yukon Lumberjacks, the Wild Samoans, the Moondogs, yeah. just on and on and on. Did you ever have a kind of a favorite team to work with that your style seemed to click with best?
No, I really like the Samoans, you know, maybe because...
Sure.
You know, from New Zealand, we have a lot of Samoans in New Zealand, and a couple of my best friends when I was young were Samoan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were great to work with. The first time we worked with them was in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And Monsoon was the agent. He said, you guys are working, and this is the finish. I can't even remember the finish. So,
yeah.
We kind of looked at each other, and I'd never met them before,
mm-hmm.
and neither did Rick. So I put a psychology of the match to them, and they accepted it, and we went out and did it, and they loved it. And then we worked for about, I think, 18 months with them.
Yeah.
I think, you know, and it was a piece of cake. One time I told a story. Alpha lined me up for a headbutt off the second rope, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he connected with me. You know, it was pretty hard. And I said, are you all right?
what did he say?
Yeah. He laughed.
You laughing off? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I got to imagine, I mean, a babyface team like you and Rick Martel. That's it's got to help you to have heels like the Samoans to work against, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
you know, yeah.
And we tried different things, like, you know, I'd be in the ring, you know, they'd be beating the crap out of me. I'd tag Rick. Rick would come in a ball of fire. He'd do one move, and they cut him off, and then they would beat the crap out of him, and then he'd make a tag to me, and I'd come in like a house on fire. Do one move, and they cut me off. And then, you know, it was great because the people wanted to see that big comeback in the finish. And then finally, you know, we gave it to them. But we gave it to them when we were ready.
Yeah. Well, I know Rick is, I mean, I know he's not as active and involved. Are you in touch with Rick at all anymore?
Yeah, I talked to him about, we talked to each other about four times a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that peculiar, right? That wrestling is so unique. Like, you guys, I mean, teamed all those years ago, decades ago. But yet, you guys could probably have a conversation tomorrow and pick up just like it was yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's all set. He's, you know, he's got his wife and his daughter. And,
yeah, yeah.
And yeah. He's and his daughter's going to college, I think, before she's finished. Very smart. Yeah.
Sure.
And he's happy as hell, you know.
Yeah, that's good. Well, and you retired from in-ring competition around 89. So what led to that decision at that time for you to decide to hang it up?
Yeah, it was actually 87. Well, that's
87, okay.
You know, I wasn't doing something, as I say. I was in the twilight of my mediocre career. And I wasn't doing anything. And then that's when Strombo said, Tony, you should become an agent, you know. And I said, oh, God, you know. And then they were looking for an agent. So then I became an agent, you know.
What's that mentality like going from one of the boys to quote unquote the office?
I got through it all right. I didn't push it, you know, like, okay, guys, I'm the boss, you know.
Right.
Don't
spot
unless you tell me. You know. Yeah. You know, I got on all right with all the guys, you know, and then I just called them aside, you know, and I talked to them, you know, and then I'd watch them in the ring, and these newer guys, actually one guy came to me probably 25 years later. I seen him at an autograph session. He says, I want to thank you for that, you know, bit of advice you gave me years ago. I had to talk him into doing it. And
and
he said, no, I don't think it'll work. And I said, please, just try it tomorrow night. And if it doesn't work, forget I ever mentioned it. Well, it worked because I knew it was going to work. And then I hid from him because he was looking for me. And when he said, Tony, I've been looking for you. Did you see it? I said, see what? He said, what we talked about. Yeah. I said, did it work? He said, yeah, like a dream, you know? And I said, yeah, I seen it.
Yeah, I mean, you were a road agent for, what, 25-something years? I mean, a long time.
Yeah, I was a road agent longer than I was a wrestler.
Right. For those who may not be aware, what were some of your duties as a road agent? What does a road agent do, or what did they do at that time?
Well, actually, you know, the show was already put together, and it was up to me, you know, to run the show and you know, let the boys know what the office wanted, you know. I was just go-between. And then, we were in Bangor, Maine one time, and the next shop was Halifax, Canada.
Yep.
So we had a plane early in the morning, and it was a beautiful day in Bangor. It was colder than hell, but they had a snowstorm in Boston. So we had to go to Boston to catch a plane to go to Halifax. And the plane was canceled. So I said to the guy on the phone, can you get me a plane that will hold 27 guys with an average weight of 260 pounds and each has two bags? And he says, I'll see what I can do. So, he got back to me. He says, I can't find a plane, one plane, but I've got two planes. I said, okay. So they were like 13-seaters or something, a smaller plane, but we could get everybody on.
Yeah.
It had to get from town to town. Like another time I was in St. Louis, and it was snowing, and we had to go into Columbus, Ohio, and do an afternoon show in Dayton and then come back to Columbus. Well, I called Terry Garvin. He was the coordinator at that time.
He said, well, let me see if I can get a plane. I said, Terry, they're not allowing planes to land or fly out of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So we waited till there was nothing we could do. We got on a commercial flight in the afternoon, flew to Columbus, canceled the Dayton show, and done the Columbus show.
Yeah.
So things like that, you know, and if there was, like, I was in England one time, and we had double shows, and there was a gentleman there. He was really angry because The Undertaker wasn't on this show, but he was advertised to be on it. So the Undertaker was on the other show. So, and he was coming, I think, let's say Wembley Stadium. He was coming to Wembley the next day. So I said, just hold on. So I said, I talked to somebody, you know, with the following show, and then I got tickets and a meet and greet for the guy and his son and his wife, you know, and I said to him, I said, can you come tomorrow? He says, well, I've got to come here. He said, well, if I said, you come tomorrow, you got front row seats, and you've got a meet and greet with The Undertaker. Oh, my God. You know?
Yeah.
Stuff like that, you know, just to smooth things over. I could have said, well, you know, we changed it, too bad, you know.
Yeah. But, so basically, you had to put out fires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have, but I did.
Well, you know? Sure, of course. Right. Yeah. And all those years, did you have any particular talent that was difficult to work with as an agent that maybe would blow you off, didn't listen to your advice, just was hard to work with?
No. Not really. No. Some of them were a little bit resented about, you know, because you had to be there in time, and that we had a press code that some didn't want to adhere to. But even you know, when Vince talked to them, you know, they were just in their own little twilight zone. They thought that they were championship stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
They think that they did it by themselves.
Yep.
You know, no respect, you know, for the boys or anybody else, you know.
Sure. Yeah. So, well, I mean, and like you mentioned, right, you were, I mean, essentially you were a road agent longer than you wrestled.
Yeah.
And you were on TV all the time as an agent, breaking up brawls and everything else during a really high peak period. When you get recognized, when people, you know, they say, hey, that's Tony Grant. Do they remember you mostly from those agent years and breaking up those brawls and everything?
No, I think it's more so with the wrestling, and cause a lot of people aren't with us anymore if they remember me wrestling.
Sure, that's right. Well,
sometimes I talk to somebody, you know, where are you from? No, I'm from Boston. You know, but I was born in 88, you know, so they wouldn't know who the hell I was.
Well, when, like you said, when people look back at your career and they talk about Tony and they just kind of, you know, watch some of your tapes, what do you hope they remember or that they get from your career?
I hope, well, I don't know. I hope they remember, like, that I was a nice guy, and you know, nice guys don't finish last, only if they want to.
There you go. All right.
Yeah. I was, if you were good to me, I was good to you, but, you know, if you wanted to get a little out of hand, then, hey, I don't want you. You know, and I was that before I got into wrestling. You know, I had friends, and if they'd try and put one over on me, then, you know, you weren't my friend. And I didn't give a damn who you were.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, and, those. I mean, you had to dip in those rugby days, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, rugby, we had 1922 on a squad, you know, and we used to go out for drinks, but you know, we'd kind of peel off in little groups, you know, not that we had anything against the guys, you know, we'd drink with them too, but there were certain groups, you know, we went out with our families and celebrated New Year's Eve and birthdays and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how you know, what you spoke of earlier, I'm assuming you're still a rugby fan. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I watched the first game at Eden Park in Auckland, which was last Saturday. And New Zealand beat the Springbok. But the Springbok came back in the second half. But I went there in 1961 with my father. And I still remember there's about 45,000 people there. You know, it was open grandstands and everything. And everybody, after the final whistle went, people run down on the field. I didn't because I was probably, I don't know, 13, 14, I guess.
Sure.
And then everybody starts singing "Now Is the Hour." I still remember that.
Yeah,
so great.
Where do you live now, Tony?
I'm in Florida, in Cape Canaveral.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm in Pensacola. So
Oh yeah. I go to the gym every morning. I'm there between 8 and 8:30, sometimes earlier. And then I got a group of guys I meet for happy hour, and I'm there about an hour.
What else do you do with your time? I mean, is Tony, are you a golfer, or what do you do with your time?
No, I used to play golf with Pat Patterson and Larry Sabisco and the Chiefs and a few other guys, Sergeant Slaughter. But I always felt I had to be somewhere else, you know. Didn't have the patience for it. I think it was a Scottish joke, according to Robin Williams. You know, they just put it on the whole world.
Yeah.
Let's invent this game where you hit a ball and you have to put in a little wee hole and see if we can sell it around the world.
Yeah, it is. You have to have a lot of patience for golf. And So you mentioned some signings earlier. Do you still get out there and make some appearances and do some signings at conventions?
Yeah, once in a while. I think I've got one up in New Jersey somewhere in November. November 8th, I think.
Okay.
I can't remember.
Sure, of course. Yeah. Well, what else? Is there any other potential projects in your future? I mean, what could we ever see a book by you, Tony, or anything like that?
No, I don't. Somebody mentioned, you know, writing a book. Actually, he wrote the Bushwhackers book, which I read. I kind of enjoyed that. But I don't think mine would be interesting enough.
Oh, I think you're being too humble.
I could talk about, you know, coming home from elementary school and going down on the orchard and be at my brother and sister and bringing 300 bushels of apples up to the shed and then going for dinner and then going back to the shed and grading them and repacking them. And then Dad would go to market in the morning and I'd go to the shed before I went to school and hand those 300 bushels up to the truck driver. Because we didn't have a ramp, you know.
Sure.
It all had to be handled one at a time.
And I'm telling you, Tony, wrestling fans would buy and read you talking about those bushels of apples.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm telling you, Tony, you need to seriously consider the book and those options out there. Because wrestling fans are one of those who appreciate biographies. Mm. And I do think they would enjoy that. I mean, you and I just spoke for, you know, a little over 40 minutes, just touched on a few things. So I really think a book that even dives deeper, I think people would appreciate that, Tony. I think you ought to revisit that. I think you're being too humble. on what you accomplished and people's interest in you, Tony.
Yeah, maybe.
Hey, you bums, we have to take a quick break.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle, all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills, the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running, and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
And thank you to Tony for coming on and doing that interview. It was a lot of fun. Hopefully we can have him back on again in the future. Guys, follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much all the platforms. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or at The Dave Dynasty, and you can find me. Also, be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube for lots of classic wrestling content, plus all of my various podcasts. And whatever platform you're listening to me here, make sure you do subscribe, make sure you share the episodes, and if it's there, if it's an option, give me a rating and review and help me in those algorithms. Also, go make sure you check out the WrestleCopia Network of Podcasts. You can find the individual podcasts on your favorite podcast platform, or you can visit WrestleCopia.com. Make sure you subscribe to all of them. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit ClassicWrestling.net to sign up for your account and then download the app on all of your smart devices. Next episode, I will be joined by Max Payne. We'll talk about guitars, his start, the Man Mountain Rock Run, and much, much more. So tune in for that next episode. All the reason you should subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. Guys, thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. And remember, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.
Wrestling Nostalgia is copyright Dave Dynasty. Bruiser voice done by John Lawson.